You're listening to the Voice of Russia in London. Every weekday from 3 until 7 p.m., we bring you international news, arts, features, and debate. We're online and on digital radio from our studios in the heart of London. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Voice of Russia from London. I'm Tim Walklate, and today our discussion is all about football. Chelsea Football Club are currently champions of Europe and are currently tied third in the Premier League. They're also the FA Cup champions. And of course, they're famously owned by the Russian billionaire Roman Abramovich. He's passionate about football, but not so passionate about his team managers. Last week, he sacked Roberto Di Matteo right after the team were defeated 3-0 by Juventus. What's interesting is that over the past six seasons, Chelsea has had no less than eight managers. And Di Matteo was arguably the most successful of them all. So does that make Mr. Abramovich a good club owner or a bad one? Joining me in the studio to discuss this is Michael Jarman, Chief Equity Strategist at H2O Markets and a former professional footballer, Mihir Bose, an award-winning sports journalist and author, Tim Rolls, a blogger who writes for Chelsea fanzine CFC UK, and joining us on the phone, Kevin Roberts, Editorial Director of Sport Business. Gentlemen, thank you all for coming. I'd like to ask you very briefly, if you ran Chelsea, would you have sacked Roberto Di Matteo? Mihir?
No, certainly not, and certainly not at 4 a.m. But then Chelsea is run by a very rich man who considers it his play toy and his train company, if you like. So I suppose he's entitled to do that. But no, I mean, on any rational basis, you don't do that. Certainly it's not somebody who's won you the greatest of all football club trophies and who's not having that bad a season, though they might not qualify to the next round of the Champions League. But considering what he's achieved, certainly not. It's not justifiable at all.
Tim Rolls?
Definitely not, especially given what's happened since when they brought in Rafa Benitez and the disruption that that's caused. I think they've got a key Champions League game next week, and I cannot understand why you would disrupt things 2 weeks before that game. Just don't understand it at all.
Michael John?
Definitely not, no. I was more shocked that you'd done it before the Man City clash, in all fairness, because that is one of the biggest games of the season for Chelsea, especially at Stamford Bridge. And like Mihir said, you know, given the success he achieved last year, both domestically and in Europe, I would have probably given him an assistance role and then brought another manager in to step in and work alongside each other. I wouldn't have disrupted it quite as Abramovich has done so far.
Kevin Roberts?
Absolutely not, particularly as it doesn't seem to have been terribly well thought through. To bring in a guy who starts as an interim, who set the fans against him, has just focused attention, a negative attention on the club, and caused more of a problem than perhaps Abramovich had ever imagined. It's been a bit of a disaster.
Pretty unanimous there then. So, Mihir, I'd first like to ask you, could you hazard a guess as to why Abramovich sacked Di Matteo?
I can only suppose that he very reluctantly appointed Di Matteo as a manager after he won the Champions League. Presumably, he didn't get hold of the former Barcelona manager, Guardiola, he's not sunning himself in New York, but he's having a sabbatical in New York. And it was a temporary appointment, and he looked at it. The team were not going to qualify again, probably for the Champions League, and that triggered something. It was very interesting. I interviewed Bruce Buck, who's the managing director, just 2 weeks earlier about the whole Plattenberg thing and Terry and all that, and he was very emphatic. He said, no, we are not looking at Guardiola, you know, Di Matteo is our man and so on. And clearly, either he was not in the loop, or something happened between that interview and the decision-making in 2 weeks' time. But, you know, if you have an owner like this who's never said publicly ever a single word as to why he suddenly comes in from nowhere, virtually, for the British anyway, and buys a club, it's impossible to guess why he would do it.
I guess it begs the question as to why didn't he just get let go at the beginning of the season or in the pre-season after he'd won the Champions League, Michael?
I think he was in a sticky situation because of the success that I think Di Matteo and the Chelsea squad achieved last season. I think it was almost kind of, he was pushed to kind of give him the opportunity
What does he care about that? Why should that bother him?
You know, you've got to remember, look, this club isn't making Abramovich any money. So for him, it's more of an emotional aspect. Like Mihir said, it's his toy set, his train set that he wants to play with every now and then. And I think where he should be more focused on the commercial side of things, yeah, he's made a big mistake in number one, giving him the opportunity to do. If you give someone the authority to run your squad and control your team on the pitch for the next season, I think you have to have complete and utter faith in that manager and give it time. Looking actually on paper, this is one of the strongest Chelsea squads that I've seen in a long time. Their midfield is absolutely impeccable. They've got a strong defence with some of the additions that they made last season. The only thing they lack is a little bit of momentum up front with the likes of Torres. He's obviously allowed his emotions to dominate and rule his head, and I think he made a big mistake in letting him go, especially as early as we are into the season. He should have brought someone else and drafted.
I must say, the story I've heard, and I can't advance this as proof, that just before the match against Juve, when he saw the team sheet and Torres was not there, he made it clear that if Torres didn't play, Di Matteo was going. This is the story that's been going round.
I can tell you that I've got a few friends that play football, and a couple of them may happen to play at Chelsea, maybe not. So I think a lot of that speculation was quite kind of quashed and drummed up by a load of hocus pocus media representatives who wanted to kind of stir something and create something. The boys, I think, that I've spoken to are generally just upset and a little bit distraught at the way it's been handled, but all in all, they're there to do a job, and they know that at the end of the season they've got to be contending for the Premiership.
What do they think of Mr. Abramovich? I mean, what do they know about
him? You've got to remember, I'm just talking from experience because I used to play football. He's an owner that gives them he dangles lots of carrots in front of their face. You do this, I'll get you my bow. He is actually, in effect, one of the lads. So I don't think there's a lot of... it's not that they disrespect any of the decisions he's made. I think he's just trying to get involved with something he doesn't understand. Football is an industry that you either know or you don't know. If you're coming in to buy a club, you need to be taken. We saw it with the Renkes last year and Blackburn starting to sack players and get rid of managers, should I say. I think it's really, really dangerous when you start mixing business with football. Football is kind of controlled by the success you achieve on the pitch. And the minute you start bringing commercial aspects into it, who the right manager is, whether it's the right profile of the club or not, or whether he's winning you games or not. It took Fergie a long time to get any traction at Old Trafford, and look at what he succeeded. Rome is not built in a day, you know, and I think Abramovich sometimes needs just a little nudge to remind him of that.
Kevin Roberts, would you agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much. The point about Alex Ferguson has been made many, many times before. He was within a gnat's whisker of being fired before they beat Palace in a replay to win the FA Cup in 1990, I think it was. But, you know, there are also vibes around a club, and things have changed since those days. There is such enormous pressure, and I think, you know, I've not met Abramovich. I don't think he does himself any favours by never communicating through the media. And it's funny, isn't it, that we've got two clubs, Manchester United and Chelsea, you know, whose owners just simply exist in mysterious vacuums. But one can only imagine that when you do invest that amount of money, you're putting something of yourself into it. You do it for emotional reasons, has been said, but you also do it as something of a sort of badge of pride among your peers, etc. And the performances are massively important to people like that. The prospect, you know, having only picked up a handful of points from four or five Premier League games, a very real prospect of going out of Europe. When you're funding a club to the extent he is, any kind of failure is going to seem intolerable to a man who gets exactly what he wants, when he wants, in every other aspect of his life.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia from London. This man has, since he's become owner of Chelsea, he's brought in three Premier League titles, four FA Cups, one Champions League. This kind of keeps the players on their toes. It keeps everyone on their toes. You know, the managerial axe will be wielded at any time. That's a good thing, isn't it, Tim?
Well, I think it is. I mean, I've been watching Chelsea, first watched them in 1967. And I think the success over the last 9 or 10 years, because of Mr. Abramovich, has been anything but total respect for what he's done in terms of the investment in the club. I mean, I think that the heart of the club is very different from it was in the 70s and 80s. But it's not just Chelsea. I think other clubs are the same. And I think the problem they've got is that he's advised by a board of directors who don't appear to understand the psychology of the supporters. If they didn't see the Benitez business coming, someone surely would have said to him, because last season when Villas-Boas went, just after he went, we had a game at Birmingham in the FA Cup and they were chants, Rafa Benitez, you're not wanted here, very clearly picked up on television. And yet, 8 months later, we appoint Rafa Benitez. Now, Mr. Abramovich can't be running the club on a day-to-day basis, but there are people, they're highly paid people who are, and I just wonder what sort of advice he's getting.
I must say, I find this a very interesting fan's analysis. Abramovich, obviously, his money converts Chelsea from an interesting club, could on his day beat anybody, but never really won anything. They hadn't won anything between 1970 and, I think, the late turn, you know, 25 years or something. But this is a great fan's perspective. But, of course, he's a great god. He's brought the money in, so he can't be blamed. It must be his advisors. No, Abramovich is a very clever man. Nobody makes that sort of money with that sort of, you know, without having business skills. So if he's being badly advised, it's his fault. Why doesn't he look at the board? And I cannot. And he actually takes a lot of interest compared to, say, Sheikh Mansour or the Glazers, you always see Abramovich very public when Chelsea are playing. So he is a very hands-on man, from all I can gather. So these are his decisions because this is his style of management. But as you said, his style of management also works. His success ratio is as good as anything, though, of course, you know, even at this point in time, better than even Arsene Wenger at Arsenal.
The problem you have is the club lacks a foundation at the moment. So it's all well and good him pumping all this money in, season out. But what young YTs have they brought through the ranks recently? Other than Ryan Bertrand, I haven't really seen anyone with real talent come through the Chelsea rank system yet, where I can sit there and say, do you know what, he might be a future England prospect.
Well, Josh McEachran could have been, but we kept buying players in, so he didn't get the chance, and now he's at Middlesbrough on loan.
But isn't there this foundation that's been at the heart of Chelsea on the pitch since the beginning of the Abramovich era?
Yeah,
in that there's Terry, there's Lampard, there was Drogba later on.
The same as Manchester United. That's the Scholes, Giggs. They all need replacing at some point, don't they? And if you haven't got someone coming through the system, I mean, although Fergie's had to go and acquire
only his... Terry has come through the system. Lampard came from West Ham, and Drogba came from abroad, so no, you're right. But you see, what people around Chelsea or Abramovich will say, well, look what the club does, you know, they're building up academies all over the world, they're doing things, they're spreading football, things like that. And the club, on social activity, has done quite a lot, you know, is in that sense, yes, but it hasn't built up. But then there are not too many clubs that are actually getting young players through.
I disagree massively. I think Arsenal and Manchester United have repeatedly, I mean, Arsenal, there's a club that spends no money, but yet season in, season out, careless of whether they're winning trophies or not, they're still a consistent threat, and they pose a threat to any of the top four teams that they play on a weekly or monthly basis. I think also, if you look at the fact that, look, let me ask you this, it's a simple question: who do you think in the changing rooms and amongst all the players, who do you think runs Manchester United? Alex Ferguson. So when you're talking about Abramovich being advised, when the Glazers advise, they're probably advised on by Fergie and then his peers in and around him, but Fergie's decision is kind of the one that is taken most seriously. And until Abramovich can put his faith into a manager that can run Chelsea Football Club on the same level that Arsenal do with Arsene Wenger and Manchester United do with Alex Ferguson, I think they're just going to be changing managers season in, season out.
Will that ever happen, though?
He's going to have to swallow a little bit of pride, and it's maybe a little bit of a dent to his ego to allow it to happen, because it is, like you said, it's his baby. He's put a lot of money into the club. He's made Chelsea a real threat. And I've got to say to him, I'm a Man United fan. You can probably hear it by the tone of my voice and what I've been saying today, but we have got one of the weakest squads I've seen in a long time, yet here we are sitting at the top of the league. Chelsea on paper should be demolishing teams like us.
Well, and maybe potentially the most potent strike partnership
but you look at our midfield, but the midfield is where we've always dominated. And with the greatest respect, you know, yeah, fine, we've got some great players coming up through the ranks still, but Young hasn't been on form, Valencia hasn't been on the greatest form this season. We lack real momentum in the central park. And then you look at Chelsea's midfield, where they can control games. Ramirez, Hazard, Oscar, Mata, they can just reel names off of the bench. They've got actually a very, very good first 11. They lack a squad and they lack depth, and they're not going to get that squad built until they employ a manager that they can put faith in and then allow that system and that strategy to play out for the next 2, 3, 4 seasons until it starts to pay a dividend.
Yeah, but you've actually touched a very central point. The American owners follow a philosophy which is held very strongly in America, which is you appoint a coach and you let him get on with it. Yeah. And that is what that, you know, you take the Patriots and the NFL. They've only had two coaches since Robert Kraft took over. That's what they do. But we are dealing here with a man of whom very little is known. Yeah. This man, the only time I've ever seen Abramovich in real life is when he was summoned to a press conference by Putin after Russia won the World Cup bid, and he sat there very nervously in the front row. That's the only time any of us has ever even set eyes on him, you know, apart from seeing him at a distance. So, you know, you're dealing with a very maverick owner who, as you say, has put in a lot of his own money, and that's how he wants to deal. I think the closest he came to a Ferguson-like figure was Mourinho, probably.
Yeah, the closest. Yeah.
And then Mourinho suddenly, with a puff of smoke over perhaps...
But why?
Well, we don't know, but what I was told was this was a difference over Shevchenko, and they had a passing exchange in a corridor, and the next thing Mourinho had gone.
Because Mourinho wasn't running the club, that's why it was. It was because Abramovich was controlling the dressing room talks effectively,
We don't know those details. I mean, we can only speculate because nobody has gone inside Chelsea and told us this is what happened. A lot of things happen in Chelsea. People change, you know, their chief executive has gone, all sorts of changes go on. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, occasionally, Bruce Buck comes out and says a few things. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, Chelsea is a very mysterious organisation.
Would you say that the Abramovich business model of being very ruthless in sacking managers, does that work outside of football?
This is the thing. I mean, I work in the banking industry now, and you could imagine Goldman Sachs, some of the biggest banks, Lloyds, Barclays, if they were chopping CEOs every 6 months, where would the businesses end up going? Because it takes time to develop a system and a strategy and a structure that works in and around the visions of the people they employ at the top. So to answer your question, no, and that's why, again, you know, Abramovich has got to look at this from both a business and an emotional aspect. But I think if he bought the club to turn Chelsea into a real threat within the, and they are, you know, they are a dominant football club now in Europe. They're well recognised and they're well respected as well. But I think to build a dynasty in and around Chelsea, something similar to what United have created under the Fergie era, I think he's going to have to employ someone, stick with him. If he gets Guardiola in, I mean, there's a man that has, well, I saw a Barcelona chick team transformed within the space of a summer's training period, and all of a sudden they were playing football that the world, it's the greatest football that I think I will ever live to see, and I don't think it could ever be replaced. So if he gets him into the camp, he needs to let go and he needs to let him run it.
We'll go on to that in a second. Kevin, do you agree with that?
Yeah, pretty much. I think, you know, my surprise is really why anybody is surprised about Abramovich and his management style. You know, he's not necessarily used to the world of football where public opinion, where PR is actually so important, where the media is so important. He's built businesses, you know, without people really knowing very anything about him, where his decisions don't have to be particularly justified to anybody else. So, you know, he's come into a football club, he's doing what he's always doing, you know, as in business, he can point to results, and he's certainly got them, you know, as we just heard, they've transformed the club. He's on a journey, and he's gone a good way along the road, just doing it his way. As I said, I'm just surprised there's so much surprise. It may not be what we're used to, but it's working for him. I think the issue that he has at the moment is effectively not to lose the club. And I don't mean that in a financial way. I mean the people who were singing, you know, we want our Chelsea back or whatever at the weekend's game. You know, you can't allow the rift between the supporters and the club to grow. There is a need for communications, because if Chelsea is going to thrive going forward, this brand, which is so well established on the field in Europe and in the Premier League now, really has to move to the next stage commercially as well.
I think there's a massive disconnect at the moment. I mean, I was actually interviewed by The Guardian yesterday, and I'm talking about how, you know, that chant, we want our Chelsea back, I haven't heard that for a few years, and the atmosphere was as poisonous against Manchester City as it's been since they sacked Jeff Hurst in 1981, and it's going to take a lot of building it back. It's not going to happen under Benitez. I don't think it will. And, you know, I just cannot believe the board have allowed this to happen.
So is Abramovich not popular amongst
the Chelsea fans? It's not him. I think people, massive respect for what he's done in terms of the money he's put in, and the fact he brought Mourinho in, and we've had people like Drogba and Ashley Cole, you know, absolute world-class players. I think that the issue is that the club have allowed themselves to get in a position where they're almost a laughing stock. What's happened in the last night? I mean, I was in Turin. Nobody was talking about Di Matteo getting sacked. You get home, you get up in the morning, and you find that he's gone. And then you find later in the day that Benitez has come in. It's almost like a bad dream. But I don't think people blame him. I think the fans, and I accept there's another view on this, but the fans would blame his direct advisors, which would be Bruce Buck and Ron Gourlay.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia from London. I'm Tim Walkley, and today our discussion is all about football, Chelsea Football Club and Roman Abramovich. I'm joined in the studio today by Michael Jarman, Chief Equity Strategist at H2O Markets and a former professional footballer, Mihir Bose, an award-winning sports journalist and author, and Tim Rolls, a blogger who writes for Chelsea fanzine CFC UK. And joining us on the phone, Kevin Roberts, Editorial Director of Sport Business. Mihir Guardiola, he's hotly tipped to come in at the end of the season. Why would he want to come to Chelsea in the first place?
Well, why would anybody want to move? You know, you move because probably the perks and the money offered is so great. It's very rewarding. I mean, let's face it, you know, we shouldn't, I think, treat even a football job on a high moral ground. And at the end of the day, people move jobs for reasons of security. I think for Guardiola, having done what he did at Barcelona, having had his year off, he might well decide that, you know, this is a move that he can make. He can cope with Abramovich. Who knows? And, you know, and obviously the riches on offer will be tremendous.
But surely there are other clubs that can pay as well as Chelsea do, and he'll have more managerial stability there.
No, but there is also, there may, when in his mind, there might also be an argument that here is an opportunity to fashion my brand of football into a country like England, where English brand of football, despite all the changes that have come and the improvements that have taken place in the long ball game having gone, is still a world removed from Barcelona. So that might well be a challenge for him. You know, that would be a big challenge, but, you know, that might well. I don't know. I don't know enough about the man and why he would want to do it. And again, on this track record, that might not be a good thing to do, but who knows? And you know, one must never forget the monetary rewards that go with these jobs.
I mean, if he came to Chelsea, doesn't this go against his ethos as a manager, what he did at Barcelona? There is too much of a risk of him being part of the conveyor belt and just being sacked within 6 months.
I think, look, you look at two things. Number one, yeah, cash is king. So we don't move jobs just to get on the moral high ground. We move jobs because it pays good and pays very well. And you look at some of the payoffs Abramovich has spent out of his pocket over the last few seasons. I don't think Guardiola would mind if he...
£86 million on paying up the contracts of sacked managers. Alone.
There we go. So I've thought of worse things that could happen. Probably Guardiola is looking at the same thing there. But nevertheless, if there was a club to go to in England, you've got to look. Mancini's not going anywhere. They are the sheikhs over at Sheikh Mansour over at Man City. I think he's got it kind of right. You know, there's been a couple of times City have wobbled, and there's already speculations Mancini's out. He's building a slow but sure thing at Man City, where it could be almost his little empire as well, as to watch Fergie's achieved at Old Trafford. So I think if there was a club in England that needed it, it is Chelsea. It's there. It's right for him to come in. That's not just with the starting 11, the first team squad. That's all the way down to the academy levels as well, which is already overhauled by the FA in this country. They've started putting in, I think it's something like you can only buy or select players that are local to your area. You can't go in and acquire someone from Manchester or down in Portsmouth. So he can start implementing his philosophy from the ground up. And I think on top of that, if you look at the fact that is one of the strongest midfield teams I've seen in the Premiership for a very, very long time. There's a lot of flair there. I'd be licking my lips if I was him coming here thinking, well, OK, if I can get them playing football the way we did at Barcelona, I can kind of impose my worldwide view on Mr. Abramovich, and hopefully this time he will take a backseat. And hopefully the idea for Mr. Abramovich is to work a relationship with Guardiola and try and make him his closest advisor. So the advisors that are in and around him, whoever else is giving him the views on how the team should be managed, I think it should be Guardiola that comes in and says, right, this is what we do. And they almost they work as a team together.
Tim Rolls. I
mean, one problem we have at Chelsea, we have a technical director, I think his title is Michael Emanalo, who seems to have emerged from somewhere. And he seems to buy and sell the players. And he's clearly giving advice to Mr. Abramovich on footballing matters. But he's not the figure of authority in the game that you'd expect. And I agree completely. If Guardiola comes in, he would have to have that relationship with Mr. Abramovich and not with Michael Emanalo, who, frankly, his track record in the game isn't worthy of consideration at that level.
Kevin Roberts, do you think that Abramovich needs to be more transparent and possibly needs to be a bit more public as well?
I'd like to think that he could do more with Chelsea if he was, and if he actually communicated with the fan base, because it would help him to deal. I think it would help him to deal with some of the commercial challenges that the club faces. But just going back to the thing about Guardiola, I mean, at Barcelona, he got used to working alongside and with a very powerful man. I mean, the guy who's the president of Barcelona, Sandro Rosell, he's not the owner, he's elected. But, he cuts an almost sort of godlike figure in and around Barcelona and Spanish football. So Guardiola knows the importance of developing working relationships with high-profile, very powerful figures. And that might actually set him up for the job at Chelsea, or at least put him in a position where he knows exactly how to analyse and assess the job and the opportunity in front of him, and possibly say no, because, you know, how many high-profile managers like that have actually walked away from jobs on their own terms? I think that independence of spirit that Guardiola has shown, of spirit and of action, would actually make him a great manager for a club like Chelsea.
So, final words. At the end of the season, you feel Guardiola should come in and managerial stability should then take hold. Michael John.
As a Man United fan, no. I don't want Guardiola coming in.
Someone
sitting on the fence looking at it from a football perspective, footballing perspective, then yeah, Guardiola should come in. I think the fans seem to want him. I think Abramovich obviously does seem to want him. That's why his name's been punted around enough times. So yeah, I think he needs to come in, but then Abramovich needs to take the foot off the pedal. I don't think he needs to be more public. I think if Guardiola then comes in, he needs to let Guardiola control the show, give him two or three seasons, expect that, you know, here, this is what I'm going to be giving you money, this is what you're going to have to invest into other players, this is what you can do with the youth system, this is impose your worldwide view on me. I'll give you 3-4 seasons to implement that and let's see how you get on. Then maybe 2 seasons in, if it's not working, get him out of the country as soon as possible, and then we can get Jose Mourinho over at United, Fergie can take a back seat, and we're champions again. Bonus.
Tim Rolls.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think very few Chelsea fans want Benitez to stay any longer than the end of the season. If obviously the best available. So if Guardiola came, I think Chelsea fans would be absolutely delighted. Now, whether he'd want to come, who knows? Who knows what his personal motivations are? But from a fan's perspective, absolutely. But you're absolutely right. He would need to be given the freedom and the time to build it his way, and not another 6-month knee-jerk, get rid of him, get another caretaker in, you know, from a very thin pool of out-of-work managers. You know, they have to do it the long-term way.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Roberts, final words.
I think it'd be great, apart from anything else, to have Guardiola playing football, having a team to play football his way in English football. For Chelsea, you know, he would only take the job, I think, if he was on his terms. If those terms were met, then I think it ticks every box that we've discussed today.
OK, well, we'll have to end there. You've been listening to a discussion on The Voice of Russia from London with me, Tim Walklate. Joining me in the studio was Michael Jarman, Chief Equity Strategist at H2O Markets and a former professional footballer, Mihir Bose, an award-winning sports journalist and author, Tim Rolls, a blogger who writes for Chelsea fanzine CFC UK, and joining us on the phone, Kevin Roberts, Editorial Director of Sport Business.
You're listening to The Voice of Russia from the heart of London. On weekdays, we broadcast live from 3 p.m. until 7. We'll bring you news, current affairs, features and debate. You can listen to us on digital radio and online. Visit ruvr.co.uk.